Her body was discovered in a nearby wooded area.
She was stabbed 19 times and left for dead,
where two adults have been shot to death.
143 people have been murdered. Hundreds more have been shot.
She had been stabbed to death.
It was the bloodiest thing I think I've ever been to.
Welcome back to another episode of Dark and Deadly. We are your hosts. I'm Haley.
And I'm Gina.
And this week, Gina is going to be covering her case. So I'm going to let her introduce what she is talking about. Oh, wait. I had something I wanted to ask you about because my mother actually told me about this case. And let me pull it up really quick. So did you hear about the girl in Texas that poured gasoline on this couple and lit them on fire?
No.
Oh my gosh. So she's only 19 years old, I think.
What?
And at, okay, 20. No, she, hold on. Sorry. She's either 18 or 19. And she was first almost charged last year, being in connection with a murder of a 20-year-old with cerebral palsy. And
excuse me?
Yeah, she was I think she's part of a gang, and they did a drive-by shooting and killed this 20-year-old named Sierra Rod, 20 years old with cerebral palsy. And then she got out of that because they dropped the charges because there wasn't enough evidence to link her to the crime, and two other people got arrested for it. And then this year she freaking goes, and the guy died, the husband died, the wife is alive, but lit them on fire. There might be something going on with an affair between her and the husband. We're not really sure on that, the details on that, but it's kind of crazy. We might cover this case later on when they find her, because she's on the run.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's crazy.
So were the people that got arrested her accomplices, or are they wrongly convicted?
No, they were there. It was a drive-by shooting with a couple different vehicles. She was with her boyfriend, and then there was the other car involved. So she was either with her boyfriend or driving her boyfriend's truck. I read this article a couple days ago. Sorry, I'm all over the place, but I just thought that was insane.
I'm glad you brought it up. That's that's horrible.
Yeah. So I was thinking maybe if there's something new in the true crime world that's ongoing cases or whatever, we could maybe bring it up at the first of the episode. I don't know.
Ooh, I think that'd be great.
Yeah. So that was that idea. That. Her name is, if anybody wants to look into it, her name is Emma Pressler. Yeah, she's 19.
19. From Texas?
Yep. From Texas. And the husband, Devin Graham, died. And his wife, he was only 33. She's only 26.
Oh,
she was hospitalized. Yeah, she was hospitalized with burns across 70% of her body. So her life will never be the same again. And yeah, and
why'd she do it? She just did it for no reason?
Well, they're not really sure on the reason why. There's a part in an article where one of his family members, the husband that died, he doesn't know if there was something going on between him and her or how they know each other exactly. It may just be an isolated incident. It may be something to do with an affair. We're not really sure. And all of her neighbors are freaking terrified of this girl. She moved in with her grandparents. There is crime constantly happening at that house. When the charges were dropped on her for the murder of the woman with cerebral palsy, literally one of her neighbors got up and moved because they were so terrified of her. And some
what
of the neighbors
the
that
actual F.
Yeah, some of the neighbors that spoke out about her behavior and the stuff that's happened in their neighborhood since she moved in like they don't even want their names out there because they're afraid of what she might do if she found out.
Oh, she's also on the run in Harris County on a felony meth possession charge.
Yeah, she's...
So this girl's life is going great.
Yeah, 19 years old. She practically threw her life away at a very young age.
And the lady that she set on fire is a mother of two.
Yeah, isn't that horrible?
That's so sad. I'm going to put a link to the GoFundMe page somewhere on our Instagram.
Yeah.
Maybe we can do it in the show notes too.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That is just so sad.
I know. What is
that girl doing with her life?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, psychopath behavior.
Well, yeah. And in our article, it says that she kind of grew up, her parents were not great people. That's why she went to go live with her grandma. But I don't know. It's just...
Happy childhoods. I'm sorry. I get that your childhood plays a part, but having a bad childhood does not give you carte blanche to do whatever the heck you want.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't. Go to therapy. I mean, I get that she's young and she probably doesn't know any better, but dear Lord.
But I mean, you have to like look at the people around you and be like, okay, what I'm doing is not normal.
Yeah, sorry, my dog was itching.
You're good. Unless she has like just like horrible mental health issues where she does not rationalize it, like rationally thinking like that, which obviously is probably the case, but I don't know. I just would hate to be someone that's on the run like that. I have too much anxiety as it is, and I couldn't do that.
No, I wouldn't even know how to survive. I'd get caught.
Me too. I'd be like, turn myself in. 2 days into it, like, okay, it was me.
Too hard. I had to sleep outside in the middle of nowhere, and I'm not doing that again. I will use the facilities at county jail. Thank you.
Sorry, all right, Dina. Okay, take it away.
So the case we're going to cover today is about a case that I grew up with, but it happened in Idaho. It's about the murder of a family and the kidnapping of two of those children done by Joseph Duncan III. It's a really sad case. And I kind of want to preface it by saying this. So the girl we're talking about, Shasta Grohn, she is a private person. You know, she's not out in the public the way, you know, you see like Elizabeth Smart being out in the public. She's had a very difficult life. So as people listen to this, I just ask that you do not invade her privacy. Let her live her life. She is, you know, I mean, she's a private person. She's not out there like Elizabeth Smart is and giving interviews constantly. There are interviews that she's done. There is a podcast that she did where she first person like talks about her story, but just let her have her private life. Let her heal and do what she needs to do and don't bug her for things. Okay. That being said, so we're going to start this off with the night where everything happened. So on May 16th, 2005, at around 6 a.m., Shasta's mom woke her up by telling her that someone was in the house. Her mom led her and her brother, Dylan, who shared a room together, out to the living room where Joseph Duncan III was standing in all black with a sawed-off shotgun. Her mother's husband, I think he may have just been a fiance. I'm going to just call him husband because that's just easier. He and her older brother Slade were out in the living room, and he proceeded to have Shasta lay on her stomach. He zip tied her hands and feet together. She later said that she realized it was going south when her stepdad and Duncan started arguing about money. She says this specifically because she used to watch scary movies with her mom, and she had seen, you know, this kind of situation play out obviously in movies. And she realized that, oh, this isn't going to turn out well. Like I'm in a very bad situation. And she was 8.
So I'm guessing that Duncan was like, everybody in the house needs to come to the living room. And that's why her mom went and grabbed her and her brother.
Yeah. And in an interview, she said that her mom was like crying and told her that there's a man there and they needed to go out into the living room.
Oh my God.
I feel like as a mother,
I'd be like, you go out the window and you run as fast as you can to the neighbor's house and I'll get shot for this, but I don't really care. You know what I'm saying? And not, I mean, like, I am speaking from a point of view where I am not in that position. And obviously my decision and my rationalization
would
change in that instant. And I would just not know what to do. But like, I, as a mom, I feel like I would risk it, you know, and not to say that she's a bad mom mm-hmm. for doing what she did, but I don't know. I would open the window and be like, you run to the neighbor's house and have them call the police. And I would just go back out there they're gone.
It's worth noting, though, I think that where they live, so they lived in northern Idaho outside Coeur d'Alene. So the houses were far apart.
Gotcha.
So they didn't have a neighbor that was necessarily like
super close
next door. It's not like a neighborhood. They lived, I mean, out in the woods.
Even just like go hide. I don't know.
Right. I get what you mean.
Yeah. And like, it's how old were the brother and her again?
So Dylan was 9, she was 8, and their brother Slade was 13.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, at that age, I would definitely be like, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad.
It's heart-wrenching. So do you think it was a random chance that Duncan came across that family, or do you think it was deliberate?
Well,
just gut feeling.
I mean, when it comes to asking about money, I feel like you have to go in with like a preconceived notion of people having money. So I think that he probably knew them, but also in that area, there are wealthy people. And so you can kind of peg houses, you know, like, cause the guy that I went to high school with who murdered that family, he didn't know that family personally. He just Google mapped a house, decided on a property that he thought had a lot of money and went for it.
Yep.
So
in this case, a few days before May 16th, Duncan just happened to be driving down the highway that was in front of their house. And he saw Shasta and her 9-year-old brother, Dylan, playing in the yard in their bathing suits. And it was at that moment that he decided he was coming back for the kids.
Gross.
It's disgusting. So he saw them obviously like out front having fun and decided at that moment, I'm coming back for them. And then he started to stalk them. And I mean like heavily stalk, watch their habits, see who was coming and going. He went into the house at night because they would leave their doors open because it's summer and it's Idaho. And that's like, people right. do that when you're out in these smaller communities, they don't lock doors. It's just a fact of life. They don't. He befriended the family pit bull even to get it to be friendly with him, probably using meat or something like that.
Yeah.
And when he would go into the house, he would like sit there and watch them sleep and go through things and like learn the layout of the house. And he did this, over a series of weeks.
Of how long?
A couple nights at least.
Okay. So it wasn't even about the money. He just went in with that excuse.
It was about the kids.
Yeah.
And they didn't have money. They didn't have wealth.
Okay.
So back on May 16th, the day that everything happened, the news reports and how I remember seeing this play out on the news, because I mean, I was aware of this. This was huge in Idaho to have somebody be kidnapped, this family murdered. Like, this was huge news for us. And I think it was national. I'm like 99% sure this was national.
See, and that's so crazy because I do not remember hearing about this.
Really?
Yeah. And
maybe
I mean,
it's because I grew up with a very paranoid mom.
Yeah. At part of 2005, we were living in Washington. So I don't know if that has something to do with it, but I don't know. I do not recall.
Coeur d'Alene's like on the border of Washington though.
I know. So that's what's weird is that I don't remember this case at all. None of it rings a bell.
I remember it so vividly. So, And what I remember from that news story is I don't remember Shasta or Dylan being present at the time that the murders happened. Like in my head, she was out back with her brother by the time that Duncan had started to murder her family. But apparently what had happened and what Shasta described in her own words was that she was on the floor, zip tied on her stomach, and Duncan came up and tapped on her head and said, "Don't look up." Then she heard a grunt along with some thuds. And when she, you know, just did as probably any kid would do, looked up, she saw Duncan hitting her stepdad in the head multiple times and with a hammer. And it was brutal. It was not, I mean, guys, this is destruction at like an unbelievable degree. And then she watched as he proceeded to kill her mom and her older brother as well. So she was present for all of this. Yeah. And then as Duncan finished that, he picked up her brother and took him out back. And she thought, maybe I'm not going to see my brother again. And then he came back inside for her, took her outside, set her next to her brother under a tree. At that point, she looked up because she heard some like commotion at the door, and her brother Slade hadn't actually been killed and ran outside and took off. And Duncan jumped up from where he was, went after her brother, jumped on him, and then proceeded to hit him in the head multiple times with a hammer again. And then for some reason, Duncan got back up off of Slade and let Slade get back up and kind of stagger off.
And then did it again.
No, he just let him stagger off. And then Slade went and sat at a bench. And Shasta recalled that as he was carrying her and Dylan to her uncle's truck, she looked over and made eye contact with Slade. And she thinks it's about right at the time when he passed away after she had made eye contact with him. She saw her brother also die.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know what this case gets to me. I think it might just be because of the ages of the kids.
Right.
That's the same. It's about, I mean, my mom had the three of us within 5 years. So between Slade and her, there was a 5-year age difference. It's two boys, a girl.
Right. Which is the same dynamic of your family.
As my family. Yeah. And I mean, you have Jay, but Jay's way older. So, you know, all of this is happening. She's sitting here thinking like, what is going on? This isn't good. How do I get away? I can't get away. I'm zip tied. She's shaking. She's terrified, obviously. And he put her in the back of her uncle's truck. And she eventually fell asleep, which it's going to happen. And then he had transported them and put them into a red Jeep Cherokee, from my understanding, from what I read, and then took off with them. It was 7 weeks before anyone would see her again. 7 weeks until they found her. So people saw her. People never reported it, though, and we'll get into that.
Okay.
But people do make mention that they did see her and they just weren't sure that it was her. And so they didn't report it. And there's a really sad scene that we'll probably all get for our Instagram page of her in a gas station. And it's just heartbreaking. Okay. But the next day, one of the neighbors had been driving by and noticed what looked like red across the front door. And so he stopped and pulled in to see what was going on. And definitely saw like, oh, this is blood. So he called the cops. The cops arrived on the scene and they said it was just horrific crime scene. And it's worth noting that like these are small mountain towns. Everyone knows everyone. So it's not like these cops are arriving to like a big city crime. They don't know the victims. There's a little less like familiarity with that. And you can maybe separate yourself a tiny bit because it's not like you knew these people. You know what I mean? So like these cops and sheriffs, they knew these people, they knew the kids, they knew how many kids the grown family had. So they were aware that there was a 13-year-old, a 9-year-old, and an 8-year-old. When they went in, you know, they see the mom and the stepdad. I do believe from my research, he had brought Slade's body back into the house because from what I read from the crime scene, they didn't have a body outside that they saw. They saw all the bodies inside, which probably explains how the blood on the door got there.
Yeah.
Because he's coming back inside. Of course, it's unfortunately going to be, his body's not going to be in good shape.
Especially with a freaking hammer.
With a hammer and blows to the head, and your head bleeds so easily. So the cops enter the house. They're taking stock of what's going on. One of the cops said in an interview he gave that he thought he was going to go back to the kid's bedroom in the back and see them, but he doesn't see him at all. And this starts to raise the alarm bells. So they start doing a perimeter search. They're looking in the woods for them. They think they're going to come across their bodies, that for whatever reason they were moved to like a weird place, but there's nothing. And I do remember very large manhunts happening at this time. I think we had billboards go up like extremely quick. An Amber Alert was put out for them. Like, they did everything that they possibly could to get the word out and like get people involved in searching the woods. Cause if, and maybe I'll put up a map on Instagram, the Coeur d'Alene area, it's woods. There's black bears, it's deers. Like, it's almost to Canada. It's very pine tree, mountainy.
Big lake.
Like, there's plenty of places where kids can run off or you can hide a body.
Yeah.
To be frank about it. Like, there's plenty of places. And they, like, the cops didn't really have, like, a great idea of who would have taken them. It's, they just didn't have a good idea. They did some reports about the red Jeep. So they had some idea of what kind of car they were looking for. Red Jeep being in the area, you know, people will notice things in small towns also if something looks abnormal. So cops then started to look into the closest thing that they're going to, which is her dad and her two older brothers who were not at the house at the time. So they really started to look into her father, specifically because they had tips come in that Shasta's mom Brenda and him had pretty bad fights about like childcare and custody agreements. I don't think he liked the fact that she was with somebody else, and so like it did cause some tension between the two. And I mean, how many times have we seen some kind of custody battle gone wrong where somebody kidnaps a kid when they're fighting about it? It happens, right. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's been some murder that's gone along with it. Although I feel like sometimes in those situations, it's more often the wife trying to kill the husband to get custody of the kids.
Right.
Or at least I'm thinking of one very specific case in Florida.
Yeah.
But they found no evidence there. Like, between his computer history and his cell phone history, he like had a solid alibi. He was at home alone, but like there was enough use during those times that they ruled him out. And they looked into the brothers. One brother, I mean, luckily for him, had been in jail, so he had a solid alibi, and the other brother's alibi checked out as well. So it wasn't either of her brothers. They were ruled out pretty early on, which is great because then they can really just focus on finding her, and then you don't have the public that's constantly questioning if it was them too, because the cops were like, no, they're not suspects. So I think ultimately it was really good that they ruled them out at a pretty early point in the investigation. We're about to get into like the hard part, and I'm going to throw in a trigger warning because it's bad. It's not good. This is the part where it gets pretty gross. So she has discussed in the past what had happened during that time with Duncan, and it really is horrific. She would watch her brother be sexually assaulted and physically assaulted, and if she would react or cry, he would hurt her brother worse. So it wasn't just her that was sexually assaulted. From what I read, it was also him as well. She described her brother as being just extremely sensitive. And what you would, I think, expect in these roles is that the older brother, even if it's just a year, would be the one protecting and comforting his little sister. But she said those roles were really reversed. They had made a pinky promise. She had made one to him that they would both get out of there alive. Which is like heart-wrenching. Yeah. You have like a sibling duo in this situation, and the little sister's like promising him that she would get him out alive. Especially so because sad. it's like it's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's sad because Dylan did not live to see his 10th birthday. He was murdered with a sawed-off shotgun after enduring like days of weeks of torture. Duncan at times would tie him to a tree and would get a switch, which is like a very thin tree branch, and would hit him with it. Like he tortured them. This was not anything but just torture and sexual assault and physical assault.
Why did he murder him?
So Duncan gives a conflicting between the two stories. Evidence and everything sides with Shasta, but here's what Duncan said about it. He said that it was an accident. He was reaching into the cooler where he kept the shot off shotgun to get a drink, and he touched it and it just went off.
Okay. So yeah.
That sounds fake, but I know sometimes when you mess with shotguns, can it do something to the integrity of the gun? Or no?
Well, I'm not a gun expert. Or does
the integrity of the gun just make it like for like the barrel would explode?
I don't know. I mean, you still have to pull a trigger. You can't just touch it.
Okay. So then it was just a bunch of BS. So he said that's what happened. And then instead of like, I don't know, driving him off at a hospital or doing something, his idea was to put Dylan out of his mercy. So then he went and took the shot off shotgun and shot him in the head.
Oh my gosh.
And said that was a mercy killing. Shasta's version of it is a little bit different. So she heard a shot. She didn't see the initial shot. She ran around the side of the truck, and that's when she saw her brother on the ground. She ran over to him and held his hand as Duncan proceeded to press the shotgun to his head and pulled the trigger. The shotgun clicked. It malfunctioned without firing. And while the both of them continued to plead for him not to do it, Duncan then proceeded to pull the trigger again. The gun fired. And Shasta described the fact that she was covered in her brother's brain matter, intestines and blood, and she said that she just like disassociated completely, which
how could you not at that point?
How could you not, like, close range? And it had been like the two of them together for this.
What a monster,
right? So she remembers just asking him why, and Duncan tried to tell her that it was an accident, but like no,
because he had a choice not to do it a second time.
A second time. A third time. He pulled that trigger.
Right, exactly.
Times.
Yeah.
And
I
so
mean,
she thinks it's...
He had any hesitation that second time when the gun didn't go off, he would have stopped. But right. he intended for that little boy to die, and that is just horrific. This poor girl and has been through so much everything. Watching each of her family members die.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and her theory on it is that Duncan killed him off because he was like the weaker link. And because she realized like pretty early on, if I don't react, it'll be better. Her brother was emotional, sensitive, was going through it fairly. And unfortunately, he was brutally murdered, but maybe fortunately because his torture at that point stopped.
Yeah.
But he was like fully aware of what was happening.
I can't even imagine.
Right.
Being in either of those positions.
No. And like, here's the even more fucked up thing is that later on, a couple days after this, Shasta came close to like being murdered by him as well. He asked her, "Do you want me to strangle you or do you want me to pull or shoot you in the head with a gun?" And she chose strangulation. Which I don't blame her because she just watched her brother be shot in the head.
Yeah.
And he had put the rope around her neck and was getting ready to strangle her when she started to plead with him. And she called him by a nickname that he had. And he stopped for some reason and then weirdly asked her if she wanted to go meet his mother in Coeur d'Alene,
What?
So at this, yeah. So he had taken her at this point. They had gone all the way over to Montana. So they had crossed, and I mean, the tip of Idaho is not super wide, but I mean, they crossed over into Montana, which A, becomes a federal crime, I believe, because you're transporting across state lines. So he had like, and they were staying at these weird campsites in the middle of nowhere and these like secluded areas because it's all wilderness up there. And this happened in Montana where he killed Dylan. And they would later on July 4th of 2005, find his body in that campsite. They did find him eventually. And the evidence from that did corroborate Shasta's side of the story. So
yeah,
the forensic evidence did say like, no,
he Science shot don't him lie. In
the stomach. Yeah. This wasn't through anything else. This didn't. Yeah. That's what happened. So they then began driving back to Coeur d'Alene, which is bizarre to me that he suddenly was like, let's go meet my mom in the area where there's billboards of your face everywhere. But obviously this guy is like deluded in the head, and who knows what he was thinking.
Exactly. That's so, what I was going to say too. I was like, why would right? he go back to where she's like, everybody's heavily looking for her and keeping an eye out.
Right. Like, that's my thing where I'm like, how does that make sense?
And I mean, you just think that your mom's going to be like, oh, hey, yeah, okay, you have, oh, you're the one who took her. Okay, that's cool.
You have a random child with you. Cool beans. That doesn't make sense, right?
What do you want for dinner?
So on the way back at 1 a.m., he stopped at Denny's, and a waitress fucking finally recognized Shasta and called the cops.
Thank goodness.
And she also made sure that he was unable to leave. So she like kept him there until the cops got there. And when the police arrived, the waitress asked her, where is your brother? To which she replied, my brother's in heaven.
Oh.
Like, she's 8, guys. This is an 8-year-old child who has seen her whole family be murdered, except for her dad and her 2 older brothers. Very small chunk. And not just like a car wreck murder, a brutal, filthy, disgusting murder that is of only a depraved mind.
Right. And that's like not something even an adult can process.
Can handle. No.
Yeah. So an 8-year-old, I mean, Gina, Hunter will be 8 in a year and a half.
Yeah. No. Can you like, no. No, I wouldn't have been able to function.
No,
I wouldn't have been able to keep, I would don't even, no.
I probably wouldn't have even stopped him from strangling me. Like,
no, I'd have been like,
at that point, I'd be like, there's nothing left for me to go on with. Like, who am I going to live with?
Nope.
I mean, like, I would just be like, just make my living hell end.
Cause you don't know that it's going to end eventually. You don't know if you'll exactly. ever be found. Who knows?
Yeah.
And she would say that, you know, he raped her, he molested her. And she said during all of these times that she would just disassociate during. And I'm thankful that that happened for her.
Yeah.
She said that she just felt numb. And then she said, I think she had a tiny bit of like Stockholm starting to develop, which makes sense because this is the person that you're reliant to survive with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a natural reaction. That's why it has a name. And because she's like trying to befriend him because she figured out if I'm on his side, the torture's less. It's right. less for my brother and it's less for me. So I'm just going to sit here and be docile and behave.
And appease him. Yeah.
Yep. And like, good for you. You survived. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
So at that point, when they found her without him, they really thought Dylan was dead. That their initial gut reaction is, okay, he's dead. We're probably not going to find him alive. And then she like filled him in on everything that was happening. And so they knew like he had died. And then it became okay, we need to find his body. So then I think that they were trying to trace back how far they had been driving for her to find him. And here's the part I was talking about earlier where somebody saw her and didn't do anything. So they discovered that he had rented a car in Minnesota and never returned it. So they knew which car. And then they started to trace back with receipts about like the gas stations he went to and where he probably would have stopped. They started to pull tape. And then that's where they found that a gas station employee in Kellogg, I think Kellogg, Idaho, about 40 miles east of Coeur d'Alene, recognized the vehicle at one of that they had stopped at a few hours before he was arrested. So somebody had seen him like a few hours before. And when I tell you that this little girl is walking around and staring at people and making eye contact with every single adult in there, probably praying that somebody would just recognize her. And how of a depressing feeling you would have to have that nobody is recognizing you, and then be like, has anyone even found my family? Like, why aren't people recognizing that I'm me? And I mean, it's 7 weeks, so I get, but like her face was everywhere. Her face was, I mean, in Northern Idaho billboards, and it wasn't like it had been years or months. It was a month and a half.
Yeah. And I know people, they have this like, there's a name for it, but you don't want to, people are afraid to call something in if they're not 100% sure on it, which I think that if you think this person even remotely looks like it, I'm sure that their family would rather be offended by you assuming that this is a kidnapped child than for a kidnapped child to continue to be abducted because you didn't say anything. Does that make sense?
And then the employee suspected that it was Shasta and then didn't confront her, didn't say anything because it seemed nothing out of the ordinary. And I'm like, oh, you just thought that the little girl who has been kidnapped looked like her. We're like, meh, it's fine.
Yeah, I would have been like, hold on, my cash register is having an issue. Let me go grab my manager.
And yep. Or every gas station, I'm pretty sure, has a panic button of some sort.
And they should, at least, because I mean, those get robbed pretty often.
Yeah. So we'll figure out a way to put that tape up on our Instagram page because it's sad. She's literally looking up at each person, Haley, just trying to get somebody to recognize her. And it's heartbreaking because she had to have felt like, this is my moment. This is where I get found, and just praying that somebody, and he's in there with her. So I don't think she wanted to say anything.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, just like the defeat when she got back in that vehicle and nobody stopped them.
Had said anything? Yep. On July 4th of 2005, investigators did, like I said, found Dylan's remains in St. Regis, Montana. The remains were sent to the FBI lab in Quantico, Virginia for DNA testing and were positively identified as his. So they did find his. And it did corroborate the fact that he was shot by the 12-gauge shotgun twice at point blank range in the head, which is the one that killed him. So Duncan was sentenced to three life sentences for this. He was at the Idaho prison when Tom was there, I believe. Tom has, I'm like 99% sure. You might call him in and ask that, but I'm like 99% sure. And he did die of cancer in 2021. I pray that he is. No, I don't pray that because you're not supposed to, but
hope he rots wherever he's
probably
at.
In hell. Yes. So this is what Shasta had to say about it. This is a statement she released to some news outlets here in Idaho. If I could, I would hug them all. If I could, I would take all of their pain away. I know that me saying that doesn't take out their pain away, but I hope they find a little bit of contentment knowing that they are thought about so often and prayed for. One thing is for sure, he does not exist anymore. Now we can live our lives knowing that. For so long, I have been struggling with hate towards that man. Today, I woke up feeling like my soul was finally free. I hope other people affected by Joseph Duncan were able to wake up feeling the same way. And the reason she says this, and she talks about taking other people's pain away, this wasn't his first crime. He had multiple crimes in the 90s. He killed two girls in Seattle, and in graphic, gory, precise detail, Haley laid out the crimes to Shasta and her brother. Like, told him about how he found these girls, decided he was going to take them, murdered them, I believe raped them, hid their bodies, He was never, I don't believe he was tried in that case, but he did end up getting tried and convicted in additional cases. I think there was one in 94. The two twins, I believe, or the two young girls happened in 97. Sammy Joe White and Carmen, I'm going to pronounce that wrong, QBS. They were 11 and 9, and they vanished on July 6, 1996, after leaving the Crest Motel in Seattle. Their bodies were found February 10th of 1998 in Washington. So he did confess to beating the two young girls to death, and then he killed a 10-year-old boy as well.
Oh my gosh, so he's always been a disgusting pedophile.
Yes.
I hate
him. Yep. Mm-hmm. So he was tried and convicted in 2007, I believe. He did serve prison. He died in prison. And he is no longer on this earth.
Good.
And he this also into like some weird religious thing with them too. And I just want to say that any person who uses religion to justify your heinous crimes, there's a special place in hell for you.
Yeah, that's icky. Don't do that.
No. You cannot justify bad with religion. If you do that, I'm sorry. You're whatever you think is about to happen to you on the other side, it's not going to. Don't think God tolerates that well.
No.
So that is the case of the Groen family death and murders. And Shasta is a very strong woman.
Yeah.
I pray for her. And, you know, she's gone through some horrific things.
Let me go see. Hold on. I think Tom's on the phone, but give me one second. I'll see if he was there and if he actually had to deal with him in any.
I don't think he had to deal scenario. With him directly, but I think he was at the Idaho prison when Tom was there.
Okay. One second. Let me go see. Okay. So he was not, this is according to Tom for his memory, because it's been quite a long time since he worked at the prison, but he was only at the prison for 2 days and then was transferred somewhere else. And Tom was not working there at that time.
Okay.
So
why was he only in Idaho? Oh, probably because he was tried other places.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So,
and I'm happy to say that she did not have to go to court and recant or like retell all the gruesome things that happened to her. He did plead guilty to all state charges against him. So he was immediately sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole for the 3 kidnapping charges. So here's everything that he was tried with. So they deferred to the federal court on transporting the children across state lines for purpose of sexual exploitation. So, because that's a federal offense. So they deferred the court to that. He was tried for 3 counts of first degree murder and 3 counts of first degree kidnapping, all in conjunction with the deaths of Brennan and Slade and Mark. But I don't know where the 3rd kidnapping charge comes in. That is the one thing I don't really know.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, it might be because of the kidnapping and murder of Anthony Martinez that we may have tried him for it.
Okay, I was going to ask if it was one of the previous ones.
Oh, okay. I think the article is just lumping all of them together. He was tried in California and he was tried in Idaho. And then he went to federal court and then died in federal prison.
Oh, okay. He was sent to United States Penitentiary Terre Haute. Why would they send him all the way to?
Because of the federal crime for transporting the kids across state lines.
I know. So they like in Indiana.
Yeah, they still did though. He tried to appeal it for mental competency. Oh, wait. So a 3-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled on March 27, 2015, that a district judge correctly determined Duncan was mentally competent when he waived his right to appeal his death sentence. The prosecution diagnosed Duncan with pedophilia, sadistic personality disorder, and antisocial personality disorder with narcissistic traits, but maintained he was legally sane.
I hope his brain cancer was stupidly painful for him.
I hope so. I pray that he did not forget anything.
Yeah.
Well, but you know what I mean. So January 18th, 2007, Duncan was indicted by a federal grand jury in Coeur d'Alene on 10 counts of kidnapping, kidnapping resulting in death, aggravated sexual abuse of a minor, and sexual exploitation of a child resulting in death, and other crimes related to illegally firearm possession because he was a felon. So he was arraigned the following day in Boise. So he did come down here. He was ordered to stand trial the following March. And then that got delayed until January 22nd of 2008. I really hate sometimes how delayed these trials go.
Tell me about it.
There's times. I get that you have to be able to have time for a defense, but...
But it's like years sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy.
So on December 3rd of 2007, Duncan pled guilty to all 10 charges against him. As a condition of the agreement, Shasta would not have to testify in the penalty phase of the trial. Due to a gag order, other details of the plea agreement were not released. So she never had to bear that.
Look at him again.
Yep. And I'm just so happy for her that she feels like her soul's free. When I read that, I was just like, oh,
right.
What a breath of relief that she had to have been able to have when he died, when she no longer had to share this earth with him.
Exactly. I mean, you feel like he's still here, and that's just not fair when he took everybody she loved.
Yep. Luckily, she had her dad to come home too, but then he got throat cancer, I believe, and that was a battle. Yeah. No, this girl's been through it. She has been fully through it.
I just want to hug her.
I know. And that's kind of all I have.
Well, thank you for that super disturbing case. But
yeah,
I had never heard it before. And I don't think that it's one that's probably been covered too often, but it's one.
I really feel like it hasn't from what I've read. Cause I'm like, I really haven't seen many podcasts about that. And I definitely noticed if I saw something that was Idaho themed, just because we're kind of left alone. But if you want to hear it in her words, I think that she does far better justice to it than I do. There is a podcast, Criminal Perspective. It's called Survivor's Perspective, Shasta McLean, which is her new name. And it was released last year on January 8th, 2020. And it's like fully in her own words. So
yeah, I'll have to go listen to that maybe like later on when it's not... I mean, that's like really hard to hear.
It's hard. It's bad. And she lived through it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
We will have pictures and all that information like we normally do for the cases on our Instagram. You can find us on Insta at Dark and Deadly Pod. You can find us on TikTok at Dark and Deadly Pod. And then you can send us a Gmail at darkanddeadlypod@gmail.com.
Yes. And then I will be putting the survey out there here soon for our next topic episode.
Yes. We're going to try and do those once a month where we both do a case related to the topic that you guys vote on. So don't forget to vote. We like to have you guys included in our podcast. So
yes.
Don't forget to vote. And then we'll also have linked in the show notes and also we'll just put it on our link tree too. When you click on the link in our Instagram bio, it'll bring up where you can listen to our podcast and all that. We'll have the GoFundMe link for the Lindros family that we talked about at the beginning of the episode. So
yes.
Thank you guys so much for joining us for another Murder Monday.
Yeah.
We hope to see you next week.
We will see you next week.
Yes. All right. Everybody have a wonderful week. Bye.
Bye.